Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everybody, welcome to the show. This is the Pop Rocks Talk, the Pop Rocks Radio Talk Show. I got all turned around there for a second. Anyhow, I'm your host, pop art painter Jamie Rocks, and this is the big show. You found it. I sure am glad you did. We're continuing this whole week and last week as well. We've had film people on, and you know how they can be. No, I'm kidding. They're a lot of fun is how they can be. And we're finishing up with that tonight. Not to say we won't have more film people on. I think we have some bands and an author on next week. So we're taking a little different approach next week. But man, I, as many of our listeners know, I'm a big film nut. So this has been a lot of fun for me. And we're ending it on a high note the last couple weeks. I watched a movie last night. I was blown away. It's a brand new movie. It just came out. Of course, it's called The Queen of Hollywood Boulevard. And the writer and director is with us tonight, Mr. Orson Oblowitz. Orson, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, of course, I don't want to give too much of the film away, but when I first got the press kit from the PR company and I saw neo-noir on there, I'm like, oh, this is fantastic. This is either my cup of tea perfectly or it isn't. And I'm so glad to say that it definitely was. What a film, man. What a film. It's fantastic.
Awesome. I'm happy you dug it, man. You know, it's my baby. You know,
I'm telling you, I'm not in the film business. I'm a painter by trade. I paint pictures of people. It's what I do. And for the past 20 years, I have been doing this thing. I have been wanting, and I touch on it every so often. Every so often I get the opportunity and I can paint some of these paintings that I call pop noir, where it's like glamour, but the kind of underbelliness is always there. You know, there's a gal filing her nails while they're dragging the lake, that type of vibe. And so when I was watching your movie, and you do not hint at the underbelly of, you know, contemporary LA, you walk right up and slap it. It's definitely there. What a film. I was just so taken with it. And you really captured, because I'll tell you, if somebody hasn't been to downtown LA, they don't know. You captured that almost gritty dustiness to it, you know. And surprisingly, is it half and half? Half this film was shot in the daytime, which is kind of weird for a noir type film. I mean, it's been done, but I was kind of surprised at that.
Yeah, I think that's interesting that you say that, because that most noirs are right, like dark shadows, mm-hmm. slivers of light. And we kind of, and obviously noir was my biggest influence on this. I'm a big fan of like Fritz Lang, Sam Fuller. Sam Fuller's wife, Krista, is in the movie. So like there was that, you know, that's how much of the noir we're trying to put in it. But the reason I wanted to put daytime is because, and I actually lit a lot of the scenes so that they were, you could really see what was going on most of the time, was because I didn't want to hide from it. I feel like, you know, I didn't want to hide from what was going on, in which noirs do, right? Like where
right.
they only show you just a little, they only give you just a little bit, and that's what makes them, you know, sometimes very disturbing. What I wanted to do was actually take noir and take a more horror approach, like Argento, who I love, and like in his film Tenebrae, where he says, you know, I wanted to light the film very bright and fluorescent so you couldn't hide from the violence. And that's what he said in 2.8 Tenebrae. And that was a lot of the reason I put it in the day. Because I think, you know, it was just to try it different, see how it worked, show everything.
Absolutely.
Not try to hide things.
Absolutely. And it definitely had elements, the story even. I mean, it almost reminded me of you know, some of the classics, you know, I don't want to say it wasn't kooky like Chandler, and I hate to say that. I want to slap myself for even putting kooky and Chandler in the same sentence because Chandler's great, but it's formulaic at this point. You know what I mean? Yours was not. This reminded me almost like something like The Grifters or Jim.
Wow.
I can't think of his name right now.
The Grifters was a giant influence on this film. So that's amazing
right.
that you caught that. Because Jim Thompson as well.
Jim Thompson,
Jim Thompson, the writer who wrote The Grifters, was a giant influence on the film. I was reading him all the time. And then The Grifters with Angelica Houston, we took a scene out of that. The scene where she gets her hand burned is from The Grifters. It happens to Angelica Houston. That's where I got the inspiration of it. And my father, who's also a filmmaker, made an amazing adaptation of a Jim Thompson short story, This World Then the Fireworks, in the 90s.
Oh,
so,
nice.
Nice. Yeah, so that's quite
the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. That is fantastic. I'm so glad to meet you. I have a kindred spirit now.
Oh, no
doubt.
This
is awesome.
Get on swimmingly.
Man, I'm telling you, and let me ask you, now for this, the role, the protagonist of the film, Rosemary Hochschild's character, Mary, had you written this whole script before finding Rosemary, or did you kind of have her in mind after? Because she is perfect. I mean, the casting,
she's
I don't know if you cast her.
She's my mom.
Oh, really?
Rosemary's my mom. Yeah.
I did not.
I wrote the film.
I did not. I had no idea. How did I miss it? Why isn't that in my notes? That's like the biggest important thing in the world.
It hasn't
I don't
been
know,
super
but...
publicized. It, you know, to be honest,
wow.
we haven't really. It just kind of, because, like, you know, I don't want to. Because, yeah, she's my mom, but she was the person for the role. It's not like I cast her.
Right.
You know, like, oh, I'm doing my mom a solid. To be honest, she was doing me a solid by saying she'll take on this pretty arduous task, you know, of being in every scene of a movie, you know?
Well, I don't want to give anything away because it's just gold, every scene. But there are some tough scenes in that. I felt bad for old Rosemary because, you know, I mean, some stuff goes down. And so here you are filming this, directing this, and this is your mom? And, you know, that had to be a little interesting from an emotional level, you know?
I always make a joke that when we were shooting one of the latter scenes of the film, which, again, I don't want to give it away, I turned around to the camera and I went with my – we were just filming behind the scenes or everything because we were just in it so deep. And I turn around and I'm like all depressed and I'm like tired and we're almost done with the film. And I just go, Freud would have a field day with this movie because the insane mother, like us making this. But no, she goes harder than I do. Like I would like push things to a certain level, but she really pushed them to the next level. She has no fear and she has no, the more adventurous, the more exciting, the more intense the moment, the more she enjoys it. And so she really pushes a lot of the scenes further, which is awesome to have because I get the benefit from that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And you captured the elements of this. I have a good friend of mine. I went to college in Boston, and then I wanted the polar opposite of Boston. So I moved to San Diego. And
I went to college.
Yeah, it was
Boston
one of those
type
of breakups. Oh, okay. Yeah,
where'd you go?
UMass, and I went to UMass in the museum school there. Lived in Deerfield, I live in Deerfield now. Dorchester, I mean. I used to take the red line.
I went to
school.
Emerson. Yeah, I went to Emerson,
okay.
And I lived out in Cambridge, out in Central Square.
Nice. This was probably before your time, because I'm an old man. But I spent a lot of time at Cambridge Square. There was a goth club called Man Ray that I think we haunted about 3 or 4 nights a week.
Oh,
I used to play chess and things. Yeah. Listening to some crazy Bauhaus
and stuff. Well, you got
that
Bauhaus.
That whole scene. Well, anyway, when I moved to San Diego, people don't send me letters or emails because I'm not putting San Diego down. It's a fun town. But I was in LA pretty much every weekend. I'll just say that. You know, it's only a couple hours away, and there's much more exciting things going on. But I made friends with some people in that neck of the woods who kind of, well, I don't want to say tiptoed into the world you were mentioned or you created from your film, Queen of Hollywood Boulevard. You know, I knew some dancers and people like that and whatnot. And man, you captured that there's just, I don't want to say a slimy, it's just a grittiness, I guess is the word. And you can see that everyone has a story just in their face. And the way you filmed this, it captured that. It was very true to life, at least my experience with that kind of world. And I thought that was great, you know?
Thank you. Because, like, you know, I think that was important. I'm no way, like, I think a lot of people, when they're looking at, you know, either the burlesque world or strip clubs or any, you know, or any sort of world that involves something that's unfamiliar, the sex worker world in general, people look down at that. I didn't want to. I love that world. I think it's fascinating. I think it's, you know, everyone's a human. Everyone's got a journey, and how you take that journey is your own prerogative. I think, you know, I didn't want to get caught in, I didn't want to ever, and I hope I don't, and I never wanted to feel like I was being condescending, because the people that were involved, a lot of them really are dancers. A lot of them, you know, have worked in all sorts of life. Some of them in pornography, whatever. And that's all our life. That's all the real, you know, nothing is better than, no one job or one vocation is better than the other. You know, we're all surviving. So,
absolutely.
I think, and I hope that came across in the humanity of these characters, that they're all real people and they all got their stories, and good or bad or whatever.
And now, folks, a couple quick messages from some of our show sponsors. Stay tuned. We'll be back with the rest of the interview after these quick messages.
Hi, my name's Ken, and I own Good Start Packaging in Bedford, New Hampshire. With my Spark Cash Card from Capital One, I earn unlimited 2% cash back on all my business purchases. And last year, that added up to $36,000 in cash back. That's right, $36,000. Thanks to that, I was able to offer healthcare to my employees. The Spark Cash Card did a lot for my business. Imagine what it could do for yours. What's in your wallet?
Real Capital One customers pay for real stories. Credit approval required.
Aloha. If you have stress in your life or even anxiety and panic, I want to invite you to the Anxiety Coaches Podcast for a way out. The Anxiety Coaches Podcast is a relaxing and inspiring show bringing you lifestyle changes to calm your nervous system and help you heal. Heal anxiety, panic, and PTSD for life. We bring you 2 episodes every week. There's no need to walk this path alone. Join us for a relaxing, informative, and inspiring time and start your journey out of anxiety panic. That's anxietycoachespodcast.com. Aloha.
Hey there, my name is Paige Beatty, and I am the founder of Hats On and Hats Off, which are 2 separate companies but aligned by the same philosophy of raising cancer awareness and forming smiles. Hats On is a for-profit corporation that sells cancer-specific hats to be proudly worn by you in hopes of raising awareness. A percentage of the proceeds will be donated to Hats Off, which is a nonprofit corporation raising money to buy wigs for cancer patients who can't afford them. That's where we're forming smiles. I believe cancer has touched almost everyone's lives in one way or another, a friend, a family member, a friend of a friend. So please visit our website, www.hatsonhatsoff.com, to learn how you can help raise awareness and form smiles.
Rocks Gear, the online web shop of high-end luxury merchandise and products, all featuring original pop art paintings. From La Jolla to Miami to London, www.merch.jamierocks.us.
Hey folks, located in the hills of Tennessee, L'Apothecary Unique offers all natural, organic, gluten-free skincare.
hair care products, perfumed oils, medicinal salves, makeup, incense, and aromatherapy items, bath salts, and even much more, including something special for the fellows, like beard and mustache balm, astringent, and aftershave. Each item is made to order just for you. So check out LapothecaryUnique.com, spelled LapothecaryUnique.com. LapothecaryUnique.com.
Well, you know, and the acting, like I said, the actors you chose for this film, across the board, phenomenal. Roger Smith, who played Duke, you know, I'm watching the film and I can smell that he has too much cologne on. You know what I mean? it just carries over. You know, I've seen these people, and I thought that was fantastic. And so it's out now, right? I mean, I'm one of those cool people that get review screeners, but no, I mean, everybody can watch. This is out on all the different iTunes and all the different platforms, right?
Yeah, it's on iTunes, Amazon, Vudu, YouTube.
Nice.
Whatever, watching movies on YouTube, you can do that. All that.
You can.
Oh, you rented there. Yeah, you can do that. I actually didn't know.
Yeah.
I didn't know you could.
I had a guy a couple of weeks ago who was on a hit show on the Facebook Watch Network. I'm like, Facebook has a network? I didn't know that. Yeah,
apparently
they do.
Yeah, get it out there. But
exactly.
Yeah, it's out in all these places, and, you know, hopefully we'll get, you know, we'll do some more. You know, I actually, just as before we talked, I just left the last L.A. screening of it because my mom was there,
wow.
So I wanted to go see her. Because she hadn't seen it yet at the theater. And, you know, there was a few people in there just at 1:50 p.m. checking out the film. And it was really cool, man. You know, I think, you know.
Now, this wasn't the same theater that you filmed the one shot where she got her birthday present. Supposedly
no.
You. Yeah, I'm not trying to give it away. That was
a
crazy theater.
Good old grills. Yeah. Yeah, that was a different type of theater. But I would love to do a screening of the film in that theater, to be honest.
That
would be awesome. You know, to like repurpose like peep shows.
Right. When the screen comes down. And your audience watching it would have to keep putting quarters in. I got to see
exactly.
Somebody get a shit
ton
of quarters.
I might make some money doing that.
I put it with them. Yeah, there you go. That's awesome. I've never been in a place like that. I've seen them in movies and stuff, and you know, in all of my travels all over the world, I've never been in a place where the thing comes down. But I know they have them.
Rosemary
She
went. My mom,
really?
Rosemary, she went when she was doing research. Man, she went to like BDSM porno sets to look at it. She went to strip clubs. She went to porn theater. She really liked. You know, she takes her this stuff serious. She was like,
fantastic.
Okay, like if I've spent 25 years, 30 years in this world, I need to learn this world to be the actor. And it was really cool to watch. I mean, that's the type of devotion she had.
And she was hardcore, man. She was hardcore in this movie. There was no just playing at it. This was, you know, she embodied it. Let me ask you, I was curious. She has one of the props, and I'm not giving anything away because it's in all the posters and everything. She has a kick-ass cane. Was that written in the script, or was that added later? Because it's perfect for her character.
So it was written in the script. It wasn't – I can't remember the script. It was exactly a gold-headed snake. It was it was definitely some sort of creature on there, but the snake became a motif early on. Because her necklace is also a two-headed snake, and then her cane. And actually, a very good friend of mine, he came to me and he said, "I was looking for this cane. I couldn't find it anywhere. What I wanted, nowhere. I mean, I searched. I'm very obsessive. I searched all over the internet, over the LA vintage stores, the desert. And then my friend, a very good friend of mine, is like, I have the cane, and I'm like, what? He's like, I have the cane you've been looking for. And he's like, I got this when I was a kid in France. And he gave it to me, and it was the snake, the gold copper cobra. And it was awesome. And it, you know, that's how it worked. And, you know, and he said, now I'm in your movie. He's a good friend of mine.
I loved the characters in this. The innocence of Grace. She played that perfectly. I don't know if that's just her normal look or if she that's acting or what, but that was fantastic.
She's British.
Oh, okay.
That's how good an actor she is.
She had that real innocent look, you know? And she looked like, if you've ever been to the L.A. bus station, like the L.A. Greyhound station, you'll see people get off with that look. And then you'll see broken, tired people get right back on the bus as it goes away.
Dude, were you stalking
me? It's fascinating.
Were you stalking me when I wrote this film?
No.
Because I literally live by the L.A. Greyhound station. Dude, I live by the L.A. Greyhound station, and that's where it was based off. At one point, it was written into the script.
Oh, really? It's right there. It's a weird world. It's right there by the what's the big company? USA Apparel or American Apparel? And then they had the tent.
Downtown.
It's been a while since I've been there. Yeah, downtown. Downtown.
It's a lot.
Oh man, I remember back in the day I was at this girl's loft down there, and we were just hanging out. You know, I was young, wolfing around and stuff. And she had a stove, like it was a loft, and so on one wall in the corner was kind of her kitchen area, and she had this stove, and it had a electrical burner, or no, it was gas. But anyway, a rat crawled up out of the stove through the burner, freaked me the hell out. I was like, oh my god, I am not sleeping here. But she had nice legs, so I just, you know, I put up with it. When you're young,
that
you
loft
do a lot.
Probably worth a lot of money now.
Yeah, exactly. I would go out on her fire escape, and I was smoking cigarettes in those days, and smoke cigarettes, and you could just make out the Hollywood sign right there by the freeway. Oh man, those were the days. And now, folks, a couple quick messages from some of our show sponsors. Stay tuned. We'll be back with the rest of the interview after these quick messages.
Support for this podcast comes from the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center, ranked one of the top cancer centers in the nation for the last 27 years. The doctors at MD Anderson treat more rare cancers in a single day than many physicians see in a lifetime. And treatment plans are tailored to an individual patient's needs, allowing more comprehensive and thorough care. To become a patient, please visit makingcancerhistory.com.
Hey guys, Jamie Rocks here. Hey, last year I was on holiday with my girlfriend Danny. We were at Disney World and having a great time. It's the happiest place on earth. And I dropped my vape, just like a Butterfingers, and it was a pain in the neck. They just don't have anything there to replace it and whatnot. So we had to drive 45 minutes each way to get a new one. And, you know, that's an hour and a half out of our day, man. But anyway, that wouldn't have happened because if I would have had this fantastic new product, the C-Ring. It's very, very cool. What it is it attaches to your vape, designed to protect your investment with comfort, flexibility while doing your day-to-day activity. What it does is it goes in there, you put your finger in there, and you hold it, and you're not dropping your vape, breaking it and whatnot. It's very, very cool, and if you need both hands, they have a lanyard you can hook to, and it's awesome. It's awesome. The C-Ring, you can find out more about it and pick one up at their website, www.thecring.com. Again, that's www.thecring.com. Be smart, be like me, get a C-Ring if you're a vapor. Very, very good. Oh, and hey, holidays are coming up, man. This is a very cool gift for somebody. If you have somebody on your shopping list that vapes like I do, get them a C-Ring. Thecring.com. But anyway, back to the film. Another great character who was just, you know, I don't want to say we've all met this guy. Hopefully you haven't. But man, he was just a slime ball. The punk rock Charlie character. He just played that perfectly. You know, was that somebody cast or somebody you knew going into the film, or you said I knew
him?
Dude,
that is my producer and my
oh, really?
Best friend in the whole world. That kid has been my we've been we make everything together. We've been friends since we were 8 years old, and and I wrote that just for him.
Now, does he have that tracksuit? Because that was an awesome tracksuit.
No, we made it for the film. He keeps trying to get it off me, and I won't give it to him. He's being like, let me get the Punk Rock Charlie outfit. I'm like, no, man, what if I need to do reshoots or shoot a sequel?
That's right, a sequel.
Yeah, the Punk Rock Charlie story.
Otto could come back. You know?
Next sequel is Otto's revenge story against Punk Rock Charlie.
There you go. See, that's perfect. It could be a whole, you know, the whole Clint Eastwood for a few dollars more shootout or whatever, you know, an esque type thing.
Yeah. The whole film is just one foot chase of Otto, who obviously doesn't walk as fast as Punk Rock Charlie.
Right.
Otto going for him. It's just one long scene, the whole movie.
And you could do it like where Punk Rock Charlie had lost an eye, so he has like a weird, like fake eye or something, you know?
That like pops out and he
like an eight ball
somehow to his advantage. Yeah, yeah, like a last action hero.
Yeah, there you go. Oh, I forgot. I forgot about that. I was thinking of the Gangs of New York. I can't remember his name.
Oh yeah,
I painted the
Daniel Day-Lewis
when he had the eagle wooden fake eyeball. I'm like, oh god, that's not good. what if they're splinters? But this was an amazing film. Where did you find a cave? There's a cave in this movie. Again, I'm not giving anything away. But a cave in L.A. There's no cave in L.A.
The background. What it says is the reality.
Really?
That is where Adam West would drive his car as the entrance to the set for the Batcave, and it's in L.A. and it's a secret place, and it's right in L.A. Like, it is not far from Hollywood Boulevard.
That's been.
And when it plays in L.A., everyone laughs because they all know that the cave is just up the street from that. She, like, really hasn't gone that far to drop
right.
the body.
That's fantastic. Now, did you actually shoot this in a club? Did you find kind of a... I don't know. I guess we used to grade them. Like grade A strip clubs were real super fancy and nice. Grade Bs were, you know, usually the ones we could afford to go to. And then there was grade Cs where, you know, girls had hooks for hands and stuff. Did you find the grade B? I can tell you a story. I can't say it on the air. I'll pick me off.
Call me after.
I will. Oh,
yeah.
Man.
So that club is a place called, I mostly don't say it, but I'll give them a shout out now because I want them to get business. Los Candiles, NDA, in Glassell Park. It is a very special place. It is not a strip club. It is a place of beautiful happenings in East Los Angeles. Really, like, it's super
nice.
Cool. The owner makes a brief appearance in the film. They do all sorts of stuff, mariachi music, salsa night.
Oh, cool.
drag queen, you know, performances. And it's a really, really awesome place. And, you know, he let me turn it into a little more of a downtrodden. But it was really hard to find a club that we wanted that worked for us. And there's great strip clubs in L.A. I mean, they're beautiful locations.
When she walks in at the beginning of the film and turns the lights on and the neon, you know, kind of buzzes on like it does, and there's that neon under the bar that's reflecting down on the bar stools there, I'm like, that can't be a set. Or if it is, whoever did the set designing has been to a few clubs.
No, I mean,
hats on, you know?
We were shooting with, we were shooting with such a limited budget, like, you know, really limited, that we, you know, my whole thing was we got to find places that we can just add on to or take away from, but that already had all the character that we needed. And we got really lucky with that place. Like I said, it's super special. It kind of created an atmosphere.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I got
the
a lot of love
the
for
wood
it.
Paneling in the office was, you know, that's how an office in that place would have the wood panel. You know what I mean? It was perfect. Like I said, I really enjoyed it. I watched it, and I waited to watch this film because I wanted it to be fresh because I'd heard so many good things about it. Everybody's really digging this. You're getting a lot of good reviews on this. That's got to be a good story.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think it's, you know, I'm not going to say the film is for everybody out there. I didn't really ever go out and say, I'm going to make, but, you know, it resonates. I think it's timely, especially with the idea of a strong leading woman who's older, who gets to really play a role that's mainly been reserved for strong men over the years, like the Lee Marvins and the George C. Scotts and the Liam Neesons, you know, these type of characters, and even, you know, Ryan Gosling in Drive, and she gets to take that on that role. And I'm really happy that it's resonating with people, you know? I mean, my goal with the film is I just want people, you know, I hope that it incites people to discourse and to talk and to have conversations afterwards and say, I love this, I hated this, what was this about, what do you think this meant? You know, and that's my goal in the end of the day, more than anything. It's just like, talk
absolutely.
About it.
Well, this film was a perfect combination of, now, like I said, I'm a painter. So what that means is a lot of my friends are kind of artsy fartsy. And sometimes a film can delve into that, into the artsy side a little too much. This was a perfect combination. It was definitely some artsy scenes in it, especially when you go for lighting and some of the music, those nuns and whatnot, you know what I'm talking about, that were performing. That's definitely cool, you know? But at the same time, it didn't lose itself in that. It kept the strong action. And Rosemary's character, Queen Mary, her evolution, she starts out hard. She continues to be hard. And then she gets harder through circumstance and the world and whatnot. And man, it's that scene where she's walking down the street and she kind of breaks down for a second and then composes herself and gets in the car. Fantastic. I'm like, man, that's good acting right there. You know?
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, it was a great. And again, I don't want to give anything away, so I'm probably saying too much on these little things. But
ladies and gentlemen,
you got to watch this film. Yeah, it's fantastic. And now, folks, a couple quick messages from some of our show sponsors. Stay tuned. We'll be back with the rest of the interview after these quick messages.
Are you prepared to navigate today's bond markets for your clients? With decades of experience, MFS has helped advisors uncover fixed income investment opportunities through volatile markets. Learn more at MFS.com.
Metal Babe Mayhem is super excited about their newest venture with MBM Music LLC. With MBM Music, we'll provide artists with a full-service platform to be seen and heard by assisting with necessary products, services, and fashion, all in an effort to increase exposure, fan base, and income. For more information, visit us at MBMMusicLLC.com. That's MBMMusicLLC.com. You create, we promote, plug in to the network.
Glittering amethyst, energizing citrine, colorful fluorite, the other side of the sun, Earth's treasures brought to light. Since 1999, we have offered a unique collection of hand-selected minerals and gems for every budget, for novices, collectors, and healers. Visit www.tosots.com to view our wide selection of offerings and use coupon code ROCKS, that's ROXX, for 10% off your first order. Remember, TOSOTS.com. Earth's treasures brought to light.
Hi, folks. Jamie Rocks here. Hey, if you're a big fan of cool historical books like me, then you're going to want to check out our newest show sponsor, Michelle Albion, a fantastic author. She's got some really interesting, cool books out that you're going to want to check out. I'm a big fan of all of these. The Florida Life of Thomas Edison, The Quotable Edison, Quotable Henry Ford, Quotable Eleanor Roosevelt, and, of course, The Quotable Amelia Earhart. Michelle's just very keen and very, very cool. And these are just very cool books. So check out her website. There's links to where you can pick these up on Amazon and Barnes & Noble all over the place. MichelleAlbion.com. 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 Very, very cool stuff. Check it out, folks. Was this a long... Let me ask you this, because I know us civilians out here, we're used to television. It's what it is. And we see a television show, and we're like, and, you know, X and X happens, and then we wait a week, and then we see Z and Z happen. So we're like, oh, man, they filmed that in a week. You know, we have no idea that, they filmed that 6 months ago, and, you know, it's just, that's how it's presented. Since I started doing the show here and started talking to a lot of film people, I realized filmmaking is not a quick thing. What was the time frame from, like, your conception of this story to it's in the can, it's a wrap? Let's get this distributed.
So from shooting to the finished final mix and edit of the film, it was about 2 years.
Wow.
It was a long, this film, you know, because again, we were doing it for no money. I was doing a lot of, taking on a lot of the roles, a lot of the other, my producers, Matt and Jeff, were as well, you know, everyone was kind of contributing as much as we could in our time that we could, and also having our jobs, having to survive, So it took that a while at the end of the process to get the final amount of funding to finish the film. We did a Kickstarter, which we were successful in, which we were very grateful for. And,
awesome.
You know, and then, so we shot it in 2015. So now it's out in 2018. And Dark Star Pictures, really cool. They picked it up. Really great company. Taking out some awesome, you know, cool art house genre films from around the world. Mm-hmm. And time. I mean, that's the thing is, like, you know, it's just you never know. And I think I was very obsessed. Like, I had hit this moment where, like, I couldn't go very long without working on the movie. So I almost had to be, like, pulled away from it at a point because I was addicted. It was just, I was so addicted. There were so many different options to explore. And, I was having the time of my life. So.
Well, I have to ask, I know we're promoting, and again, folks, the name of the film is The Queen of Hollywood Boulevard, and it's a fantastic film. We've got links up, and once the show is, once this episode's over, it'll be converted to a podcast. However you're listening in the future to the podcast, that link follows. So there'll be a little link there. Just click on it, and you can get to the Queen of Hollywood Boulevard Facebook page and whatnot, and find out even more about it. So it's... you know, and it's everywhere on demand, so you can pick this up. Are you going to be, you know, you screened this in L.A. Are you going to be, you think, putting this in any select, theaters around or whatnot? Or do you think we'll just, I know the business has changed a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, we're lucky, to be honest. We're so happy that we even got to do this L.A. theatrical run. But, yeah, I mean, we got a plan, and Dark Star's working with us really hard to try to get it around the country, do specialty screenings. I mean, I really think this film thrives as kind of a contemporary midnight film. That's what I set out
to
do. You know, kind of in the vein of films that I grew up loving, Eraserhead and, Blood Simple and these movies that kind of got taken out with this midnight screening idea. So, yeah, we're hoping to do some of those around the country. You know, it all just depends on how it starts performing and catching on. But in a theater is where I love it because, I mean, I'm biased, but I feel like you can just get lost in it like a hypnotic, drug-induced fever dream. So.
That's fantastic. So there were some memory flashback scenes in the film.
that, and it was cool how you did it. It was very home movie reminiscent. Were those actual, like, was that really like little you and stuff in those?
Yeah, that's shot by my dad, and it's of my mom and me when I was a kid.
Nice. That's so cool. See, there's a trippiness to it, and because it's true. Fantastic. Fantastic. Well, I have to ask. I know we're promoting the Queen of Hollywood Boulevard right now, but I have to ask, and I know you Hollywood types can't always talk about upcoming projects. Is there anything in the hopper that you're working on that you can talk about, or any ideas mulling around?
Yeah, I just finished a new movie. It's called
Hell
Is Where the Home Is. Yeah, it actually just had its world premiere in London at Fright Fest. And it will be playing the Denver Film Festival November 2nd in a midnight screening.
Nice.
And it's a really intense, contained thriller, home invasion movie that it's got Fairuza Balk.
Oh, wow.
A bunch of great actors in it. And it's wild, you know. It's kind of, I think, an interesting evolution from Queen to this one. It definitely has some of the same traits and a lot of neon colors and a lot of,
That's cool, though.
It's pretty intense, but yeah.
This. I'm writing myself notes as you're talking. Orson, we're definitely going to have you back on the show because
hopefully it'll be out next year. You know, we're just kind of sorting that all out now. So
nice. Well, that's fantastic, man. That's fantastic. Let me ask you: when you were a kid, now I know your folks are in the biz and everything, and you kind of probably grew up around in that world a little bit. Did you know filmmaking? Were you like a film guy? Did you know, like, hey, this is what I need to be doing? Or did that come later?
It was always kind of there. I've always been a photographer foremost, just always, you know, photography is kind of my first love, but I've also always wrote.
So good with light,
thank you.
You know?
Well, the photos at the beginning are mine, the black and white ones. They were kind of a few of my, photos of Hollywood and what I've experienced. And, but yeah, my dad told me not to. He said, man, you don't want to do this life. Like, look how much it's been a struggle. It's so, you know, it's not, this business sucks. Go be a lawyer, go be a doctor. And I was like, I'm going to film school. And he was like, you're an idiot.
My father was like, he always owned his own businesses and, in the industrial world. And I didn't really have an aptitude for that too much, but he was always, you know, beat me over the head with work somewhere with a steady paycheck. Don't be self-employed because it's sometimes it's feast or famine, you know.
Totally,
yeah,
the struggle is real. When I finished shooting Queen, that when we walked off of set, I had $17 in my bank account. I was like. I had nothing after shooting, and you know, we survived. It's why, you know, it's what we do, right? Like, that's what you got to do.
Right. Well, it's fantastic, man. And I, you know this, I don't even have to tell you, keep doing what you're doing, Orson. You're real, real good at it. And it's,
oh, man.
So refreshing to see that, you know.
Thank you so much. That means a lot.
Did you know the first time after editing when you watched The Queen of Hollywood Boulevard, you had to, right? I mean, that's like asking a hot girl if she knows she's hot. Of course she knows. Did you know that this was really something, though?
I remember, the first cut of it was very different. And that's a whole other story. Mm-hmm. The film went through many reiterations. But I remember sitting there with my producers and everyone, and we watched it off a computer screen. And it wasn't perfect, but we knew there was something special here. And we had to dig into it to figure out what that was. And I think, you know, and I really, again, like, I commend my team for being there to help push that and to give me the time and to help support the time to find that and to let it incubate. And, it was very much a process of finding the film every step of the way. And now I look at it and all I see is the mistakes.
Paintings. People are like, oh, I love that painting. And I look at it and I'm going, I got to sneak in here at night and fix that, man.
I wonder if I'm in this gallery.
I got to get in here, man.
I know, I'm watching the film in theater, and I'm like, I wonder if I can, like, switch out something here real quick. Man, there's no way to do this. It's out
there. Right. It's done. Oh, man. Well, you know, that's all you can do is learn from. And you know what? You're probably, I imagine it's the same thing. Nobody else sees it. You know what I mean? We're our own worst critics, I think, a lot of times. I've done shows that where I thought it was just gold and I missed the audience mark completely. I've had a few of those where it's like, oh, man.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I got it.
Dude. Oh, yeah. I mean, you never know. Like, I guess I'm a masochist because sometimes I'll read reviews of the film and, like, one review just tore it apart. I think it called Queen Mary, Rosemary, like a poor man's cheap Liberace of Hollywood or something.
Oh,
like,
wow.
Oh, man.
Yeah, but you know what? I bet that guy's never been to downtown LA. Downtown LA, it's interesting because it's got those echoes of a grander time, but it's kind of tired, you know what I mean? And you get that vibe down there, and then you'll see like a tourist or something that just doesn't have, they miss that completely, and you're like, oh wow, maybe I'm reading too much into this, you know? But it's
No, I think you're right.
I mean, it's
very much the vibe there, where it is this like clash of gentrification and consumerism, and the glam of Los Angeles. With, I mean, you know, downtown LA and Los Angeles has the worst homeless, the largest homeless population in the country. I mean,
right.
You know, we're dealing with real issues here. I mean, not in Los Angeles and. You see that come together, and it kind of creates this place, you know. So I love
absolutely.
It,
I do as well. I think it, you know, every city, every place has a certain vibe to it. And I was talking to a metaphysical friend of mine at a party, and she's really into all the, you know, she'll tell you what sign you're born, you know, all this stuff, and read your chart and all that stuff. And hey, you know, I'm not putting her down. That's her thing. But she was like, oh, because there's ley lines in the country and some of these cities, because I'm like, oh, there's just Athens, Georgia. You go to Athens, Georgia, Portland, Oregon, things like, it's just a weird vibe. You know what I mean? And LA, it cannot help but be a little bit odd because it's just, there's such a history there. People coming and dreaming and making it and not.
You know? No, totally. And like, you know, a big thing I always talk about was like, for most of the world at Los Angeles, because it's where a lot of films were shot for the portion of the 20th century, was our representation of disaster events or anything or love or suburbia, you know, like Leave It to Beaver shot in the valley on Orion Street. And then Terminator 2, at least to me, which was always what I saw as the vision of nuclear war disaster was downtown LA in a mushroom cloud, right? That moment with Sarah Connor. Mm-hmm. Like, these are the things that I think the culture that America exported. So there's always these references everywhere in LA, you know, of these films.
You
so I don't know. That's, yeah.
Absolutely. And even if you're not aware you're recognizing it, you do. You know, it's in your subconscious almost because you've seen it, you know.
Absolutely.
You're absolutely.
You know, that's
right.
What films are like, you know. That's why I love films, because they do sit in your subconscious. They sit right behind your eyeballs, and they, you know, that's what a great film does. It just, they get stuck in your head. And that's why I love films.
Oh yeah, it's fantastic. Well, like I said, I can't talk. I can't sing this film's praises any more than I am. It's. I've watched a lot of movies this year, Orson. I've watched a lot of movies, and this is probably one of the best ones I've seen. I really want to thank you for making it. This really, you know, I thought it was fantastic. It was a pleasure to watch. I came away from it, and I really enjoyed that, you know. And that's what a movie's supposed to be. It's, you're supposed to enjoy it, you know, especially these times we live in, and there's a lot of craziness. I like my craziness on the big screen. That's supposed to.
Me too. Me too. I'd rather stay to the big screen beyond instead of the globe or whatever we're dealing with right now in our fall of civilization that we've somehow entered.
I'm telling you, it's crazy. I thought I had tripped and fallen into a parallel where I don't even know. I will tell you this. I said this reminded me of I told a story a couple nights ago on a show, and after the big election and the paradigm shift in our world and whatnot, I was at a cocktail party after, you know, wandering around for a couple weeks, going, you know, do I sell everything and move to Norway? What's going to happen? And I just bought this house 6 months ago, but maybe that wasn't so smart. But I was at this cocktail party with my gal Danny, and this woman said to me, she goes, "Well, Jimmy," she goes, "you're a painter, right?" And I said, "Yeah." And she goes, "Well, your job just got a lot harder." And I said, "What do you mean?" She goes, "An artist's job is to either show light on reality or help us escape from it. There's two directions an artist can go." And she goes, "Whichever way you choose to go with your," hadn't seen my work or anything. She goes, "Whichever way you choose to go, your job just got a lot busier for the next couple of years. So get ready, you know." And when I was watching your film, it took me away for a couple. I didn't think about politics or the world, any of that, while I was watching your. I was sucked into it. And I think that's
awesome.
You know.
Well, there's a reason why my bad guy. There's a reason why my bad guy has a photo of Ronald Reagan above his head.
I noticed that in his office. Oh man. I did notice that. And I was like, yeah, that doesn't surprise me. Oh man. Oh. And then the gal with the American flag bikini later on in the film. Yeah, I got it. I was watching it, man.
Yeah.
I was watching it. fantastic. And the burlesque performers in it and whatnot, the dancers, first rate, you know. I don't know where you found them at or if they're just friends of yours or whatever. They did a fantastic job. And that's got to be cool for them, too, to be in a movie, you know, to take their talent into on the film.
Yeah, I mean, I always kind of, like, had this idea that I was like, you know, if it all else fails, we'll just be able to put some great performances on screen because we got some really talented people that, you know, are really talented, all of them. I have a lot of admiration for, and I'm very, you know, I love the circus troupe that we mangle together for this film because I really love
absolutely.
Those performers, you know.
And I don't know who it was, but the spoken word guy, I want to hear more of him. fantastic.
He's a movie of himself. His name's Jonathan Shaw. You could read his book. You should buy his book.
Oh, really?
They just came out. Yeah, he's got two books, maybe three now, but he's got Narcissa, which I believe came out on HarperCollins. It's Narcissa, Our Lady of the Ashes, which is a great book. And he's got a book, Scab Vendor. And Jonathan is a dear brother and a fascinating man. He opened the first legal tattoo parlor in New York City. Fun City Tattoos. He's a nomad. He's like something else. And he grew up in Hollywood, and those were his diary entries from when he was young in Hollywood that he reads in the film.
Oh, that's fantastic. Fantastic. I'm definitely going to check him out. I wouldn't be surprised, Orson, if he gets on this show. I'm going to try.
You should. He'd do it. He's the man.
Yeah. He's fantastic. Like I said, it's a great movie. I was thoroughly engrossed in it, and I want to see more. So I'm glad you have the new movie that's coming out. And I will say this, since you're finished up with that one now, well, get to work, sir, because we need more.
Yeah, thank you so much.
I'm going to send you Facebook messages at least once a week. So, are you writing any hit screenplays yet this week? Are you? kidding. Oh, man. Fantastic work. And so nice meeting you. And I want to, I said I'd keep you for about a half hour. It's been a little longer than that. I apologize. You're just fascinating.
My pleasure.
I want to thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to be on the show. It's awesome. I have to email
thank
Clint.
Thank you for having me. Anytime.
And let him thank
anytime.
Him as well. Absolutely. Have a good one. And ladies and gentlemen, this episode, of course, will be converted to a podcast and pushed out on all the various social media platforms. We're on about 70 or so podcast streaming platforms now. The biggest one, of course, being Apple Podcast. Do me a favor, if you are listening to the show in the future on Apple Podcast, it doesn't cost you anything. They have a ratings and review. Click that button. Leave us a review or a rating or whatnot. That helps keep us up at the top of the page. And when I talk to our advertisers, that makes my job so much easier. I really appreciate that. And, that's fantastic. Also, when you watch the Queen of Hollywood Boulevard, whatever platform you're watching that on, they also have ratings and reviews. Do that. Leave a review. You know, let people know what you thought of it. And they also have shares. Share it, because if you dig something, chances are your friends are going to dig the same stuff. That's why they're your friends, you know. You guys have similar interests. So very, very important in this world of engagement and social media that we live in. It helps out a lot, man. It really does. Cool, cool, cool.
It does.
Well, three cheers for Mr. Orson Alderowitz, and I really, really like this movie, Queen of Hollywood Boulevard. Check it out, everybody. Thank you, sir.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Absolutely. I'll tag you when it gets posted, probably about an hour. That's going to do it for us, folks. Have a great night. And, it's the weekend. I forgot it's the weekend. And something's going down tomorrow. I don't know, some crazy painter's birthday or whatnot. I can't even believe it. Yes, it's true. I will be turning 25 tomorrow. No, 25 and a few years. But we will see you Tuesday. We're back Tuesday. We've got a fantastic guest on Tuesday, a very cool new metal band out of the Dallas, Texas area called Dark Avenue. So tune in for that. 9 o'clock here on the East Coast. And that's 6 o'clock out on the west. So we'll see you then. Have a good night, everybody. Bye.
This has been pop art painter Jamie Rocks's Pop Rocks Radio Talk Show. It has been executive produced by Jamie Rocks, recorded at his studio in Deerfield Beach in South Florida. All rights reserved by Pop Rocks Limited for broadcast on Blog Talk Radio.
Hej, det här är Hicks från Sverige och ni lyssnar till Pop Rocks Radio med Jamie Rocks.
Blog Talk Radio.